This is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee.
How does it feel to win this race?
Well, it feels terrific. I'll tell you, I got the greatest car owner and greatest mechanics in the world, boy. They just keep this thing running all day.
Well, you drove a consistent race all day. Were you worried about Sam Hanks less than 20 seconds behind you?
Well, I was concerned about him, but I wasn't too much worried. I just wanted to keep this running.
Well, you certainly did a beautiful job, Pat Flaherty. And what are your plans now?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to go to church and thank God.
The checkered flag, Ray J. Boyce, with the right hand up in the air, waving to the crowd, the winner of the 1964 500-mile race.
In the main stretch for the world's fastest flying start they come. The green flag is waved, and the 1973 Indianapolis 500-mile race is on.
Yes, and what a battle for the lead. It's Bobby Unser shutting off Johnny Rutherford in the turn. Then it's Mark Donohue and Mario Andretti. Unser leads turn two and Howdy Bell.
We have a tremendous clash here going for the number one turn in the back of the pack, Mike. We'll take it back here once again. The red flag is out. The red flag is out. We'll not try to guess how many cars. Near the very back of the pack, something happened.
Sullivan will try it. Mario Andretti low, but he still cannot make the pass. They're on the straightaway once again.
Danny Sullivan hesitates behind Mario Andretti. Now tucks in right behind him. Pulls out alongside on the main stretch. Begins to roll past Andretti. Ron.
All right, Danny Sullivan gets him this time. Sullivan gets him this time and goes by very smoothly. Mario Andretti now dropping about five car lengths behind.
The 1996 Indianapolis 500 is won by Buddy Lazier. Davy Jones finishes in second position. Crash in four. Big crash in turn four. Guerrero.
A big crash. Roberto Guerrero. We've also got a second car that flipped over as it came down the straightaway coming off of four.
Tony Kanaan lost it. Got up high in the marbles. Kind of glanced off the wall and collected Sarah Fisher in the north end. Two cars involved. Sarah Fisher and Tony Kanaan in the north end, turn three at the 92nd Indianapolis 500.
Mark, we had just started commenting on the fact that lap traffic was going to begin to play a factor in this one as the fast cars were approaching the cars at the tail end of the lead lap. There were 26 cars on the lead lap with 105 laps complete.
Welcome to Trackside with Kurt Cavan of the Indianapolis Star. I'm Kevin Lee. Thanks for joining us tonight. We are on location at the Pit Stop Barbecue and Grill in Brownsburg. 932 East Main Street is the address. That's also 136 or Crawfordsville Road. We're a little bit west of O'Reilly Raceway Park, a little bit east of State Route 267. Happy to have you along board. We've still got seating available inside and outside. There are speakers set up to listen to the program outside. Come by and join us. Poncho Carter is here dining this evening. The 17-time 500 starter and former pole sitter will join us on the program coming up in a little bit. We'll, as always, field your email questions. Kevin@1070thefan.com is the email address, and we'll cover as much ground as we can. They have dinner specials here tonight. They've got a couple of USAC cars out there. I think a Ford Focus midget is what I saw outside. And they've got an old-time midget from the 50s inside that's always here in the restaurant. Lots of racing memorabilia and pictures and excellent food. So come by. If you can't make it tonight, come by and join us here at another time. Well, Kurt, we are inching closer to the beginning of activity at the Speedway starting on Saturday. And there's been a lot of confusion about the schedule, so I'll mention it again. There were some more emails sent to me last night that there was something, some misinformation out there. It's veterans, noon to 2. All veterans, not just refresher courses. All veterans available on the track, noon to 2, and then rookie orientation, 2 to 6. That's the schedule both days. And any time when you have a little bit more condensed schedule, if you have a nice day, I think we're going to see a lot of activity.
You're going to see a lot of activity because it has to be giddy up from the get-go. You have a very short week when you consider you've got to practice for qualifying, and then you've got to practice your race setup, too, and establish your race setup. Certainly this benefits more the Penske's and the Ganassi's and the Andretti's, but you've got to get all your work done in short order this week.
By the way, I neglected to mention our Open tonight, if you're curious what highlights those 500s were from. 1956, 1964, 73, 85, 96, and 2008. Thanks to Matt Hicks, our studio producer, putting that together again for us today. Nothing real big as far as news is concerned, although I did see this story from the Vail Daily, VailDaily.com, that Buddy Lazier is trying to put together a deal. I don't know if this is just a matter of the local paper calling the local driver, one of two drivers from Vail, and saying, do you have anything going? But Buddy says that right now, he basically says 50-50. He says, we're kind of half and half. We're close with about three different programs with the 500. I'll be there, but don't have anything signed just yet. Says he'll come to Indianapolis on Thursday, so that's tomorrow, to work with teams and sponsors to try to gain a spot in the race. And this story says he's hoping to secure a deal that will put him in position to succeed in the series for the next 4 or 5 years, focusing on getting back into a car that can win, and says, I'm not finished yet.
Well, I think that's optimistic. I do think he'll still make a bid to get in this race, but I don't see anything beyond the 500, and I think it's optimistic to think that there's going to be multiple adjustments to this grid before we get started, or any time here in the few days, because, again, it's a very short schedule. Once you start the month, you're really going to need to be focused on making the race and being ready to race in, again, about 7 days here.
Buddy is 42, and in a perfect world, if the economics and the sport was the way you would like it to be, he is someone that would have a ride. And he would still be a full-time competitor. He would, I presume, still have the talent to do that.
Well, in these cases, you hate to say why somebody's not in a car, but most of the teams have had a chance if they would have liked to hire several of these guys, like Buddy, like Jacques, and they haven't. So why is that? I don't know the answer to it. Maybe it's a combination
of factors.
One is
they don't have a link to a whole lot of money.
That's one, but there are other guys out there who have not paid for their rides as well.
Sure.
I would hire him in Indy. I know that. I'd hire Thomas Schechter, and I'd hire Buddy Lazier.
Something that came down a couple of days ago that I don't think we've gotten to yet, Oriel Servia had put on his Twitter account recently that he had some optimism for the 500. The original thinking was maybe he'll end up with Ray Hall Letterman again, but that seat is taken. Do they have another chance? Is there anywhere else that Servia could land?
Well, I don't see it. I think it would have to be as a second car at Ray Hall. Ray Hall has talked about that, but didn't really sound optimistic that they would go with two cars. By the way, this is a little awkward. We're seated on the wrong side of each other. This is almost like pitting with a fuel mechanism on the wrong side of the road course.
So normally I'm on your left side, and you're confused because I'm on your right?
Not confused, just a little out of sorts, that's all.
Not the fact that we're broadcasting in a remote location. That's probably the biggest difference, and you can hear yourself
coming
back.
No, I got that
people
part.
People staring at you.
Anytime you try to broadcast with the smell of barbecue, that's a good thing.
See, I got here early. I got here at 5:15 and have had time to eat, and I'll probably have time to eat again before I leave at 8 o'clock tonight. That's the way we like to roll. There are 37 car and driver combinations, and we touched on this last night. You know, the reality is we're not sure if anything other than Beck is going to come together. You said last night you think Jacques Lazier has a good chance of ending up there, and you think that'll probably go. Probably nothing else, but if someone like an Oriel Servia or Buddy Lazier comes up with a good amount of backing, they could find a spot. We are not married to those 40 entries. Someone else that doesn't have a TBA entered into the official entry list could roll out one of their backup cars add somebody if they chose to.
It's not quite that easy given the lease program with Honda. You just can't decide today that you're going to start on Saturday and have Honda. You would have had to have alerted Honda that that was a possibility.
If they are prepared for 40 or 39 and we have not reached that point, then you could take somebody else's spot. I would assume this is one of the reasons why Brian Barnhart always knows really what's going on, because I would assume they use him as a bit of a go-between and, all right, what are the chances of this other happening? I don't think it's going to happen.
Right.
You can go ahead and hook up a deal with this guy.
One of the other things, I want to turn around what you did last night, and I'd like to talk about the top nine maybe later in the show. The nine guys you would expect to qualify in the fast nine, and I came up with a couple ideas that might surprise you.
Okay, so we'll look at that. So we'll try to pick a list of nine that we think will be in the Fast 9 coming up on poll day, which is a week and a half from now. We'll get to your emails, Kevin at 1070thefan.com. We've got several good ones already we want to roll through this evening. Come by and join us. We're just getting started here at the Pit Stop Barbecue and Grill in Brownsburg with Trackside, Kevin and Kevin on 1070 The Fan. Trackside would like to thank one of our partners, Indiana Tobacco Prevention and Cessation. Make the decision to quit smoking. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW for more information. With Kurt Cavan, I'm Kevin Lee. Matt Hicks is our studio producer tonight. We are out of the studio at the Pit Stop Barbecue and Grill in Brownsburg, 932 East Main Street. Easy to find if you're driving by. You see the 1070 The Fan banners outside, and you see a couple of USAC cars, the Ford Focus cars outside. So we invite you to come by and join us. We're broadcasting until 8 o'clock this evening. Kurt brought up a question before the commercials just a moment ago. If we try to come up with a list, last night we talked about who's going to have the biggest risk of not making the field of 33 out of the 37 or 38 we expect to be there. Let's talk about who we think is going to be in that fast nine. They'll qualify 24, and then the top nine will go out and have a one-at-a-time shootout with one or two extra opportunities. And I came up with a list of about 11 or 12 that I will put in that category. And I've got a list of five that I would consider
locks.
Very, very likely.
Do you have Power in your lock?
He is the first. He is not in my locks.
Okay, so you've got to assume Castroneves, Briscoe, Dario, and Dixon. Those four make it. And I think Kanaan makes it
no matter what.
That's
my fifth.
There's your five.
Yep.
Okay, so let's discuss these other four. Give me your first one that definitely makes it.
Marco.
I think I have Marco in that as well. He's qualified very well at Indy. He'll be very strong as TK was.
Will Power I probably have next. I'm a little more debatable in these numbers here, but Will Power I think will make the top nine.
Well, he was ninth last year. And he's got a little more confidence, but he didn't show particularly well at Kansas, so I'll concede that one. So we're two for two on these other on the remaining four. I think we're going to find two different ones though, right?
I'm going to go outside of the standard because you could talk about a Danica Patrick next and some others. I'm going to say Mario Marias.
Marias, he qualified seventh last year. Of course,
he'll be fast.
That's about how many seconds he lasted in the race as well. I'm going to throw in Townsend Bell. Because
that's a good one. That's a real good one.
Alex Lloyd qualified 11th last year. Townsend's very good at the speedway. I think that car is going to be fast.
How much of a relationship does he have with Ganassi? How much are they involved?
He is going to be involved because he's got Andy Brown, and that's an extension.
And he works for Ganassi.
He works for Ganassi, and that's an extension of the Ganassi program. And the Sam Schmidt guys are pretty good on their own, and they showed that last year with Lloyd. Townsend's going to have just enough help that it is going to make a difference, and he's pretty good at it. So I would put him probably in my eighth or ninth to make it, and let's bring out the last one, and this one I feel pretty good about.
Do you? I've got several possibilities here. I've got Graham Rahal. I've got Paul Tracy. I've got Thomas Schechter. I've got Danica Patrick, and I've got EJ Viso.
I've got one that doesn't fit any of those in that group.
Who you got?
Hideki Muto. This is a Newman Haas car.
They were good on the ovals last year.
They were very good last year. You had Graham qualifying fourth last year in a Newman Haas car. They were 1-2, at Kansas last year in qualifying? Mm-hmm. Now, there were some...
After some penalties,
but they were very quick on the ovals, and Graham was very quick here last year. Hideki is pretty brave. He's pretty fast. And I'm going to put Hideki in there pretty strong. I think he's got a shot to be 7, 8, or 9.
I think we're looking at probably these that we've mentioned. Is there anybody else, though, that we haven't mentioned?
You had Schechter, Graham, Viso, and Danica.
Yeah.
Well, Danica would seed the best if you were just seeding them, mm-hmm. 1 to 4. I think Schechter's going to be quick. I just doubt that Dryan Reinbold makes the top nine.
You know what? We don't really know that much of what to expect from Alex Tagliani, but he qualified fifth at Kansas with the fast race team. That's a new team, so maybe that's someone that you get a better idea of once we see cars on the track. So maybe that's one that you could throw out there as a long shot possibility. Certainly with Andretti Autosport, you think about Ryan Hunter-Reay, but I also think about how mightily he struggled for speed last season when his teammate Ed Carpenter wasn't incredibly quick, but was plenty quick enough, was at least mid-pack. How much he struggled for speed, straightaway speed at Kansas. I'm not all that confident in Ryan being quick. I think he's got an opportunity to be somewhat of a factor in the race, but I don't know how quick he is going to be.
And let me shoot down another one of your possibilities, and that's Paul Tracy. I think Paul's going to spend all of about 10 minutes in qualifying trim.
I tend to think you're right. They're not going to worry about that all that much. You know, the year that he almost won the 500, or did win it, depending on who you ask, they weren't quick. They had some difficulty all month. They had difficulty in the race, so there's a lot more to it than just pure speed, and he's probably not going to worry about it all that much.
Well, at his age, he's looking at the big picture. Some are better at that than others. Most of them say they're going to look at the big picture. They're going to focus on the race. The reality is they don't. But Paul Tracy and Barry Green will not be focused for a moment on qualifying.
Anybody else we left out there that has opportunity?
I think Viso's an interesting name. I would go with Marias before I went with Viso, just based off what we saw from them last year in particular. Marias, remember, they had a terrific month, and so did KV. So, you know, you had Townsend Bell finishing fourth and running well. You had Tracy really was better than a ninth-place car in the race last year. He's not going to qualify ninth, but you had a good KV representation. I would expect that those cars will all be in the 7 to 15 range, but I don't see anybody just making a solid case for a top 9. I think you got to go with Marco, and Danica will be really close, obviously, to that. In fact, she'll probably make it. I should put her in there and haven't, but I do like Hideki Muto, and Townsend Bell will be one who just is right there, I believe.
All right, email questions now. Kevin at 1070thefan.com from Nick in Fishers. He wanted to share some comments he sent to Kurt about blowing up IRL, something from a story yesterday from Randy Bernard. He thinks it's an outstanding idea. I'm a huge IndyCar fan who lives in central Indiana. The heart of the IRL, and I was one of those fans of both the IRL and Champ Car Kart, I believe that dropping the term IRL would be a positive change for IndyCar's perception with the media and the general public. He goes a little different direction than the negative connotation, though, saying IndyCar needs the mainstream media on board. Dropping the name IRL and creating a way for the name IndyCar to represent the entire ladder system will give the media something to relate the series to. While mainstream news, entertainment, pop culture news couldn't care less about the IRL, even they still get that the Indy 500 is a big deal. IndyCar equals Indy 500. IRL equals what? So this is more about positive brand recognition.
Yeah, it's kind of a... It's not a tired topic for me already, but I'm okay either way. I think you could still call it the Indy Racing League on your letterhead and in your contracts. The reality is, I think what he is trying to say and Randy is trying to say is, I'd just like to get away from calling this the Indy Racing League. I don't think they're going to change a lot legally.
I think it's being considered.
Well, I think it's being considered.
Yeah.
I just don't know that it's a deal.
From a conversation that I had today, I think it's being considered.
Well, I know it's being considered. I'm just saying I don't think that was the focus. Even if they were to keep Indy Racing League, I still think they would like to get it out of the vernacular.
And that, in some ways, takes some time. And you know what? The easiest place to start is you get the people that work for you never, ever to refer to it as IRL, and that still happens. Or the people that your teams, and that still happens. So until the people that are involved stop the use of that phrase, it's still going to exist. That's probably the best place you can start. Someone that wants to paint your series and your sport in a negative light can refer to it as the IRL if they believe that's a demeaning phrase. They can do that all they want, but if you'd like to get away from that, then you just start with internal communication. Hey, if we refer to the sanctioning body, Indy Racing League, in general, let's just talk about IndyCar, IndyCar Series, IZOD IndyCar Series, that kind of thing.
And there are many people who need to take that class, including Allister Jr. the other night on our show. He must have called it the IRL
exactly. Eight
times.
That's where you start. That's more important than changing even officially changing the name. You at least could start with the people that you have some influence with.
When you get that memo, will you pass it along? Because I'd like to see it.
I don't pass along internal memos. Now, if it's something that they decide, I would assume this would be something that's going to be out in the front. Out in the front that they're going to say, hey, we want this, you know, we want to refer to it as the Indy Racing League, the IZOD IndyCar Series, and so forth. Next up is from John. With Briscoe testing Cup cars with such frequency, I don't know if it's frequency.
He did once last year, once this year.
Okay. Well, it depends on your definition of frequency. His wife's association with the sport, Nicole, covers NASCAR for ESPN. And the difference in pay, on one hand, combined with Sam's struggles, no consistent improvements towards glory in NASCAR, and his legacy in IndyCar about to be made mockery of by Dixon, would you foresee a situation where Hornish and Briscoe eventually change positions within the Penske organization?
No.
I would say no.
No,
now, maybe somewhere down the road you see Sam coming back over, although there are no seats at Penske, but I suppose if it does not go well at all, Penske could say, you know what, we're done with you as a Cup driver, and we don't have room for you, so you have to go somewhere else. But I would see no reason why you would take Briscoe out of a strength and move him over to, and I don't know that Ryan
exactly has
a big interest. Sam wanted to do this.
Well, there's a difference in your nationality and what's been your focus growing up, and NASCAR has not been Ryan's focus growing up. Now, he is down in that environment. They live in the Charlotte area. He's around it all the time. He's intrigued by it. He might actually do a race at some point, but I just don't think that he's a long-term thinks he wants to run NASCAR. Now, of course, as you say, the money, or as suggested, the money is always a big voice in people's heads. You know, if I can make this much in IndyCar, I can make that much in stock cars. But I just don't see it, at least in the short term. You know, Ryan wants to win the Indy 500. And I know that sounds pretty straightforward, but that's his goal. He doesn't really say, you know, even privately, I want to win the Daytona 500 or I want to win Charlotte. Or
would Sam have gone to NASCAR had he not won the 500 in 06?
Probably not.
Yeah.
So it's.
And Roger may not have allowed him. That was a concession to some point. All right, you want to do this? Well, you've done something for me. You've won another 500 for me. I will allow you the opportunity to try Cup.
And that was very much in the discussion, because as soon as Sam signed, that very statement was made by Penske.
Well, remember at that time, there was a prevailing thought that he was gone from Panther to NASCAR at that time. And that was a pretty heavy rumor at that time, and then he signs with Penske and goes later. This is from John in Nashville, Tennessee. He just wants to send us a note. Yesterday, I had the pleasure, you heard Davey on the show last night, of riding with Davey in the Indy Racing Experience two-seater. And even 40 to 50 miles an hour slower, I gained a profound new appreciation and respect for what these guys do to keep us mere mortals entertained. Big thanks to one of the sport's true heroes and nicest guys for moonlighting at the Indy Racing Experience. Another day at the office for him was one I will never forget.
I've done it with Ryan Briscoe, and it's the only thing, and we were just talking about this before the show started, the only problem with it is you can't, and you're in a two-seater, cannot see in front of you.
Can't see straight out.
Now, when you get to the corner, that's when you start to feel the tires squealing, and you can hear them, and you get a sense that the back end of this car is going to come around on you.
That's it. You feel like one, you're going to tip over. And then, two, there's no way the rear end is not going to slide out. And then after a couple of turns, you just kind of relax. Well, I guess it will stick.
Yeah,
I guess it will stick. I'm just along for the ride.
The first two corners, you realize you're pretty helpless anyway.
Yeah.
And if Ryan Briscoe decides that he's not going to make the corner, there's not much I can do about it. So.
Well, he's going to hit first if he doesn't make
not
the corner.
Not necessarily.
As long as the rear end doesn't spin out, then I'm hitting first. I'd rather the car push than be loose.
I've thought about all those loose race cars and back-end crashes
Seen. Let's leave this a little bit on the tight side here for this trip around. Thanks for the email, John. More of your questions and comments coming up. Kevin at 1070thefan.com. We're at the Pit Stop Barbecue and Grill in Brownsburg. Join us. It's Trackside on 1070 The Fan. Trackside would like to thank one of our partners, Indiana Tobacco Prevention and Cessation. Make the decision to quit smoking. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW for more information. It's Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee at the Pit Stop Barbecue and Grill. Happy to be here and be out and about. We'd love to do this more often. Come by and join us if you can. If you can't get by tonight, stop by the Pit Stop Barbecue and Grill at your earliest convenience here, since we're in Brownsburg, we have to visit with the only race car driver I know that lives in Brownsburg, the only IndyCar driver I know. There are others, but Poncho Carter, 17 starts in the Indianapolis 500, the rookie of the year in 1974, started on the pole in 1985, won a couple of, no, one midget championship, two sprint car championships. Is that correct? I looked this up earlier.
So far, you're doing good.
So far, and all around good guy, and
well,
still
that, well. We just hit the bump in a row.
I'm sorry, you were going to stop me when I started making things up.
I don't know where you read that at.
It was on Wikipedia. It has to be true. It's an all around good guy. Who are you working for this month, spotting?
I'm going to be spotting for Milk Aduno.
Okay.
The IndyCar, and then we're going to be helping out the Indy Lights with Adrian Campos Jr. with Team Moore.
Okay. We're always happy to visit with you. One of the things that's always interesting to talk to you about is, and I think the Star is going to do something on this, on spotters. We talked about this a couple of years ago. I guess it's easier for you as a former driver, but that would be something I would never want a piece of, being somewhat responsible for someone else's safety.
Well,
you've got no specific control, and ultimately the driver is going to be responsible, but that's quite a responsibility.
Well, it is, in the fact that you need to feed the driver as much information in a very short period of time as you can to help the driver make the decision, because racing is a matter of split seconds.
Yeah.
So depending on what the situation is, you know, you've got to be able to get that information to the driver as quick as possible and hope the driver makes the right decision.
Do any of them kind of revolt and not take the advice?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah. Some better than worse?
Like the guy I worked with last year.
I don't think who you worked with last
year. Well, I know who that is.
Oh, he's giving me four fingers, so I have to kind of figure that one out.
Well, take three away and you're good.
Okay, very, very good. Do you think is it helpful, truly? You probably believe this because you were a driver. Do you believe that it's helpful to have been a driver and been in the seat?
Well, personally, I think it is, because a driver knows the information that he wants, knows the information that's important to him at the time. Somebody that really hasn't raced, they may have, you know, the knowledge of racing and may be able to relay that information, but a lot of times it's subtle things that you'll see happening on the track that most times the drivers would have to recognize that, especially Meyer, in their mirror, or next thing you know, the car is right there with them. So a lot of times you can give that information that helps the driver make the decision. Like a lot of times it'll be nothing more than saying, you know, the top side looks a little bit faster, half a groove up, just from watching what somebody else is doing, either in front of the driver or behind the driver. That gives your driver the option of moving a little bit to a different line on the track and maybe find a faster way to make their car go around the racetrack.
In some ways, do you enjoy working with drivers who don't have as much experience? It gives you a greater role as a driver coach rather than just as a spotter during races?
Yeah, I mean, the driver coach part of it is trying to get all that really good information and not try to tell them how to drive, but tell them, you know, what's happening on the racetrack with weather stuff. And occasionally you might have to remind the driver. A lot of times drivers get so wrapped up in trying to control the car, basically, they forget all the features they have in the car to make adjustments to the car with weight jackers, roll bars, and stuff like that. And now that's the you know, push to pass or whatever the you know, advantage with the engine, you've got 20 of those that you got to, you know, use during the race. Some drivers forget they even have them for a while.
Two ends of the track. Would you rather work at the north end or the south end, or does it matter to you?
No, I prefer the south end only because,
which is turn one.
From my experience from driving at the Speedway and from being there for many, many years, going down the front stretch at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, it looks like you're driving into a tunnel and there's no way out.
Yeah.
And that is something that a lot of drivers, especially new drivers and even some veteran drivers, have an issue with, because they always want to pinch that corner. So I find out that if I can sit in turn one and make sure they get through turn one using the correct line and stuff, usually turn three is pretty easy. And then the same thing on race day, it helps to be there because I can help the driver, you know, with people coming out of the pits and being able to help them from making contact and stuff, which it's a really tight pit lane. And, you know, by being there, you have a little bit of control on pit exit and maybe a little bit on pit entrance, but mainly to help them get out of the pits.
when a driver comes to, especially Indy, for the first time, and he's observed by veterans like yourself, how long does it usually take you to decide whether this guy really gets it or he doesn't get it based off watching his line?
It usually doesn't take very long. I mean, if you've got a guy that's picking a different line every time he gets to a corner, then he probably needs a little more help. I mean, if he's pretty consistent with his line, even if it's not the ideal line, at least you know he has control of the car and he knows what he's doing. So it usually doesn't take a veteran very many laps to determine whether a new driver is going to be a decent enough driver to continue to run and practice or be sent home. And usually that doesn't happen very often.
Poncho Carter is joining us. You came up in the day when it was very common for drivers to graduate from USAC, graduate from the dirt tracks, short tracks, and run in Indianapolis, and then continue to run in those races. How much did that transfer then compared to now? It's been often said that now the USAC circuit is a better proving ground for stock cars than it is for Indy cars. And obviously one difference is now we have more non-oval events. But how did that experience help you driving in Indy cars compared to what you gather it does now, or the more difficult transition it is now?
Well, I don't really feel that it's any different. I think any of the drivers that come out of the USAC ranks or the open wheel ranks could go run Indy cars, or they could go run, you know, NASCAR. It's just that it seems like the opportunity opens up more for them to go run NASCAR when they come out of USAC. Now, whether it's, you know, I don't know exactly what that is, whether the NASCAR people look at the drivers coming out of USAC because of the current, you know, USAC veterans that they have in their series, or whether it's the fact that the IndyCar people think that if you don't have road racing experience, you're not going to be able to drive an IndyCar, which, you know, that's not necessarily the truth.
How much road racing experience karting did Hornish have? Because I still think that if Hornish had stayed in IndyCars, he was competent the last couple of years. I think that he could have held his own in the current Izod IndyCar series. Agree, disagree with that?
No, I agree. Sam's an exceptional talent, very, very good on the ovals, and his early background in go-karts and stuff was on road courses.
Yeah, I knew he had done some.
Not just ovals.
Okay.
And I think the biggest thing was he hadn't done very much road racing with a big car. And so driving for Roger Penske, he accelerated that program. They did a tremendous amount of testing in older Indy cars that weren't necessarily anything like what he would be driving on a regular basis, that they could go out and let him drive on different road courses and learn. And he had a lot of good instructors and stuff. And, you know, Rick Mears is a good road course racer, although he had no basic road racing background before he got into Indy cars. He'd only run off-road stuff, which is, you know, road racing on dirt, you might say, but a lot of ups and downs, too. So I think if you're a good race driver, you can drive ovals or you can drive right and left on the road courses also.
Is there a track that you would find to be the most difficult, or which do you think is the most challenging for a race car driver on this circuit right now?
On this right now, it's pretty tough to say. I mean, all the mile-and-a-halves are pretty similar. They all got a little bit different quirks to them and stuff, but still the Indianapolis 500 with the long straightaways, right, the sweeping corners, you've got to really keep your momentum up. And I think that that track is probably still the one that is the toughest one for everybody. There might be a few road courses that are physically a little more demanding, but the length of time, the 500-mile race and stuff, it definitely takes a toll on the driver.
When you work with lights drivers, how does that differ from dealing with IndyCar? You're dealing with, you know, in this case this year, going to be dealing with Adrian Campos Jr., who does not have much, if any, oval experience.
He finally got to run an oval down in Kentucky last week.
Okay, so that would be an area of little.
Very little oval experience, but he's a good kid. We worked the one day down at Kentucky with the test, and going to do some orientation laps tomorrow out there, and going to be out there and try to help him out with the line and stuff. And in a way, I kind of like doing that with lights drivers when they're new. You know, I had the opportunity to work with Martin Plowman last year, and prior to that, Dylan Battistini. And, you know, I've had a chance to work with a lot of drivers coming up through that series, and it's kind of rewarding to see them go on and do something. But I think that my experience, I can relate to them and usually figure out how I can get something to relate the way they think with the road racing background into the way that, that we think of how we run an oval and stuff. And most of the time I found out that the drivers understand it and they adapt rather quickly.
What do you think of Martin Plowman? He's with Andretti Autosport this season, and he's in championship contention early on this season.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, Martin's doing a really good job. Last year he had some incidents on the road course that didn't damage the car bad, but I said kept knocking wings off of it. So I saw him at Kansas and told him, I said, you're doing a good job. The wings are staying on this time. And then he's had a few little wall bangers in practice and qualifying, but so far in the races and stuff, he's done a really good job. And I like Martin. He was a lot of fun to work with last year, and we still see each other from time to time. In fact, he was the official mud scraper on my son Cole's sprint car a couple times this summer, or last summer. He'd come to the races and help out, and we almost got him to get in it, but he said he didn't think his dad could afford the crash damage for the sprint car.
We've been asked a lot about the situation at Kansas where you had lap cars between first and second place on the racetrack. How would you feel about removing those, or do you just not like to mess with that? And how do you feel about push to pass?
The push to pass I think is good because the cars are so equal anymore that there's got to be a little more in it for the driver to be able to do. I've kind of got mixed feelings on the lap cars in between. I mean, from a driver's standpoint, Scott Dixon worked extremely hard, had a good car, worked hard through traffic to get a lead, and he's going to lose the lead during the yellow, but he's put all these slower cars, and maybe not that much slower, just happened to be a lap down, and maybe even faster than you know, if you're running second and the guy's running eighth, he may be nowadays just as quick or quicker than you are, but somehow during the course of a race, he went a lap down or two laps down. Entertainment part of it, though, I think that's where they might need to look at it and address it as far as getting somehow figuring out a way to keep those lapped cars in a group of their own so they can still race for position, yet let the lead lap cars be in a position to race for the lead and stuff from the entertainment deal. Like I said, as far as being a past driver and stuff, you work really hard to get all the advantages you can, and you know you're going to lose them with the yellow, and then have, you know, two or three cars as a buffer, and then all of a sudden have the guy that's trying to beat you right on your rear wing. That's a tough pill to swallow for a driver.
That sounds pretty similar to my answer. I'm philosophically opposed to it. It's not fair, but this is show business.
Oh, yeah.
So you got to at least think about it.
Yeah.
I don't have to think about it. I would rather the lap cars be there because I think Dixon deserves that. I understand the bunching up. That makes sense. But he passed those cars, and he was so much better in traffic than the other guys. I think he should keep that advantage.
Poncho, thanks for coming by.
Sure enough,
this is your town. You're welcome to come by anytime we're here. I'm not sure if they'll ever have us back, but we hope so.
Well, if they do, maybe I'll stop by.
Excellent. Poncho Carter, the 17-time 500 starter, the former pole sitter, the USAC champion multiple times, joining us here in his home area of Brownsburg, the Pit Stop Barbecue and Grill. We've got more to come. It's Trackside with Kevin and Kevin on 1070 The Fan. Time now to play this week's Inspire Indy 500 Fun Fact Challenge. Answer the following fun fact correctly, and you can win tickets to Community Day. Be qualified for the race weekend grand prize, which is a two-night stay at the Omni Severin Hotel, breakfast for two, and two tickets to the 500 Festival Parade, and also the Indianapolis 500-mile race, courtesy of Indianapolis Downtown, Inc. Downtown Indianapolis, amazingly always new. This week's Fun Fact Challenge is... What position did Danica Patrick finish in the 500 during her rookie year? To play the Inspire Indy 500 Fun Fact Challenge, go to the Fun Fact Challenge link at Indy500Coverage.com. And if you're not sure of the answer or you want to do more researching, there's a handy link to Inspire Indiana's virtual library, free to all Hoosiers, right in the contest page, Indy500Coverage.com. Also, if you joined us here at the Pit Stop Barbecue and Grill this evening in Brownsburg, you had the chance to register for an Ultimate Race Package, which is tickets to Pole Day, Bump Day, Carb Day, and Race Day tickets. Very nice. And our winner is Michelle Plokta. I apologize for mispronouncing your last name, but if Michelle, you are here, you need to be present to win. Come on up, and you'll win. And if not, then we'll draw another winner out here coming up in the next few minutes. Kurt, looked like you had something for us.
No, I was just going to be in the information delivery stage, and because it's going to be asked, and people are going to say, okay, well, what was the pole speed last year? Because it's going to come up. We're aiming for 224.8 from a year ago, and to make the top nine was 223 flat. So the difference between first and ninth was 1.8 miles per hour. So that's just, I just thought I'd throw that out there. By the way, in the top 24, the 24 speed was a KV car, by the way, Townsend Bell, at 21.1. So just try to throw those numbers out there because I'm going to get asked over the next week. 24.8 is the number to repeat the poll from a year ago.
We talked about most likely to make the top nine. We threw out 14 or 15 names and got it down to nine each of us. James emails, come on, guys, you have to mention Vitor, qualified sixth at Kansas,
absolutely,
always good at Speedway. I thought about Vitor, and I really do think Vitor has an excellent opportunity to be in the top 10, maybe top six, something like that for the race. It would surprise me a little bit if he qualifies in the top nine. It would not surprise me if he qualifies in the top 12 or 13.
That's correct. I'd put him in that 10 to 12 range, and Foyt knows how to make a car go fast. There's no question about that, so that'll be ones to watch. A follow-up also, we were talking about the HVM and the Conquest teams being two that you would be concerned about among the regulars, mm-hmm, missing the show at Indy. The HVM cars last year qualified 29th and 31st. The Conquest car, in fact, I think one of them didn't make it. Tagliani didn't make it. And then the other one started 33rd. And then that was Bruno Junqueira. And I'm not sure he qualified 33rd, but Tags took his spot.
I'm going to say he was in the 30th, 31st, 29th, something in that range.
So those four cars that we're talking about were no better than 29th. So they're going to be more than likely in that same bracket this year.
Scott's question is, my understanding, Alex Tagliani was admitted to Methodist Hospital within the last 24 hours with a serious viral infection. Do you have any idea if that's the case? I did see something on track forum linked from what was believed to be his Facebook page today, saying something along the lines, here in the ICU, everybody's nice, hoping I'll be okay by Saturday. So I don't know if that's accurate or not, if it's actually Alex Tagliani or someone has mocked a Facebook page for him, but...
Well, let's hope they're not mocking that one.
If he's actually putting something on his Facebook, that's at least positive that he's able to communicate at this point, so we'll hope he feels better in a couple of days. By the way, I want to thank Jason, who's here tonight, who we talked about this the other night. It was his idea to come up with golf passes to auction off. I'm not sure if this is a prize or not or a sentence, but those that donate at the Carbonite Burger Bash at 96th Street Steak Burgers can bid to play golf with us and actually pay money for that.
Here's what I'm thinking, too.
But Jason secured passes to Heartland Crossing, an excellent golf course here in Indianapolis, so we will have that up for bids.
Here's my idea. We'll decide our handicaps. We'll decide the players with us, and then when your team loses, you can buy lunch. How's that sound?
My handicap's 60 then. 60.
Well, mine's 58, so I like that.
Yeah.
I'll have the Reuben on rye.
Okay. Yeah, we'll count on that. I'm playing for my first time tomorrow. Paul Dalby is here, and he is sentenced to play with me at the Brickyard tomorrow in the IRL ministry. So it's for charity. That's how I look at it. I've been meaning to donate. This is my donation, and I'll donate a number of golf balls into the creeks as well. Thanks to Poncho Carter for coming by. Thanks to the Daves here for helping us out, set things up. Matt Hicks back in studio for Kurt Cavan. I'm Kevin Lee. Thanks so much for joining us tonight from the Pit Stop Barbecue and Grill in Brownsburg. Come and join them another time and join us tomorrow night for the Talk of Gasoline Alley at 6 and then Trackside again at 7 here on 1070 The Fan.